Mark Harris is the author of the new biography, Mike Nichols, A Life, where he explores the life, work, struggle of the celebrated film director, stage director, and improv comedian who was one of the most creative forces in all of American entertainment history. Following a difficult, lonely adolescence, Nichols left for college in Chicago, then returned to New York in the mid-1950s, where he burst onto the scene as half of a groundbreaking improv duo with Elaine May that was the talk of the country. He went on to enjoy parallel careers of nearly 50 years as a celebrated film and stage director, including Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, The Graduate, Silkwood, Working Girl, and Angels in America. As a stage director, he won 8 Tony Awards for his work on Broadway. Mark Harris is the acclaimed author of Pictures at a Revolution and 5 Came Back, and a writer and columnist for New York Magazine. Again, the name of the new book is Mike Nichols, A Life, which is just out from Penguin Press. I don't know if you heard the introduction that I gave you, Mark, but I was telling you how much I love the book. So welcome to the program.
Oh, well, thanks so much. I really appreciate that.
I don't want you to miss that part of the introduction. I have always found Mike Nichols to be an extremely interesting character. I grew up, I had older parents, and so they played Nichols and May albums for me over and over and over again. So they were the soundtrack of my youth. And reading this story and their story was just really fascinating. What brought you to the subject?
Well, partly what you just said. I mean, I was, you know, we think of Mike Nichols as someone who had an extraordinary half-century career as a director in both film and theater, but I was really interested also in the fact that that was preceded by this equally extraordinary career as this giant comedy innovator, as a performer. You know, it's not just your parents. People who grew up with those Nichols and May records were able to recite some of those routines to me almost word for word. They really go deep in your DNA. And so I guess I wanted to know not only how Mike Nichols did that and how he got from there to his career as a director, but also how he got from his very humble origins as basically a refugee from Germany as a small child to becoming this extraordinary comedy performer.
I want to get into that upbringing in a moment. Did you know Mike Nichols at all?
I did. My husband, Tony Kushner, wrote Angels in America,
right.
And I got to know Mike when Tony and Mike started working together on the HBO miniseries version of that. So I knew him probably starting when he was about 70 for the rest of his life, and that was a very settled, happy time in his life that really betrayed no hint of all the struggles that had come before.
So let us talk about those struggles. And as you mentioned, he was born 1931 in Berlin. Then he and his younger brother were sent to America in 1939. And he had a very, very difficult life. As you put it, he caught very, very few breaks.
It's true. I mean, of course, there were many refugees. That's not an uncommon early and mid-20th century story at all. But, you know, I think Mike's circumstances were particularly tough. His mother was too sick to travel, so he, at 7, and his 4-year-old brother came over alone on a boat, and his father, who was already in New York trying to kind of build a medical practice and a life for them, was not really ready for the kids yet, so they were put in a foster home while Mike's father searched for an apartment. His father died young. His relationship with his mother was pretty challenging. And also, Mike lost all of his hair when he was 4 and all of his ability to grow hair as a result of a bad reaction to a vaccine. So you can imagine a little boy in America at 7 who doesn't look like other kids, who doesn't sound like other kids, who's just beginning to learn to speak English. That's an awfully challenging start in life. You know, people have asked me if he was destined to become who he became, and I would say absolutely not. Nothing in his early years suggests the career that he was going to have.
So when it came to his career, and not of just being a creator and someone who is artistic and behind the camera or working behind the scenes of the stage, when he was with Elaine May, he was front and center and he was the star. So for him to do that, how much of a transformation was that for him?
Well, I think it was a huge transformation, and part of it was rooted in a habit that began in Mike's childhood, which was watching other people to see how they behaved, watching other kids to see who was popular and what made them popular, who was awkward and what made them awkward. That kind of acute, piercing skill, that ability to look at other people and see the things that they don't even realize that they're showing you, became a pretty invaluable tool in Mike's arsenal when he met Elaine May and the two of them sort of clicked instantly and started developing this new style of comedy, this improvisational comedy that was largely rooted in these very specific observations about what makes people tick. You know, the situations that Nichols and May put on stage were never really extreme or outrageous. They were pretty ordinary, you know, two teenagers in the front seat of a car necking, or a phone conversation between someone who's down to his last dime and a telephone operator. But it was all of the little behavioral stuff that the two of them found in those situations that made the sketches so explosively funny and so unlike anything that audiences had seen before.
You talk about this, but how give us a sense of how the partnership worked between the two of them.
Nichols often said that they were ideal complements for each other because he said Elaine could fill and I could shape. And what he meant by that was that if you created a situation and it just out of the blue, Elaine May could instantly come up with 6, 8, 10 things to do with it, funny things. It would just set up a kind of chain reaction in her head about what a character might do or say. And Mike, because by his own admission, he didn't have that same instant on the spot inventiveness, became really good at shaping a speech even while he was acting in it, of knowing when they had done enough and it was time to move to the next beat, and when it was finally time to wrap it up. He really developed this sixth sense for whether the audience was attentive, whether they were following it, whether they were in suspense about how the sketch would turn out, and whether they were ready for it to end. So, which in a way was a kind of his first piece of directing, even though he would not call it directing. He directed the destination of the sketch.
Right. What made him a good director? And that is both for film as well as for stage.
I think Mike had this really unique combination of an ability to keep his eye on the ball. In other words, to know exactly where he wanted something to end up, and a real spirit of collaboration, an understanding that he wasn't the only person in the room with a vision, that to realize his own vision, he needed to help writers and actors in particular realize their vision. And that kind of double ability, that intensely collaborative nature and the ability to keep your hand on the wheel and steer the whole thing to its destination, is a really unique set of gifts to have as a director.
You also write in the book quite a bit about the drive that he had, just this hunger, really a hunger for security as well as for status, but it was a drive that was really quite unquenchable.
Yeah, and in some ways so unquenchable that it was a mystery to Mike himself. In the middle of his career, when he had really had success after success after success, and then some failures, but followed them with more successes, he went to a therapist and said, I'm doing so great, everything's wonderful, everything's settled, I'm happy in my life, why is it never enough? And the therapist essentially said, because that's who you are. And I think for Mike, it was a process of realizing that that hunger to do the next thing, to keep going, to prove yourself over and over again, would never fully go away.
When you talk about what did he learn from his failures, from the times where things didn't go right?
I think what's remarkable to me about Mike was that he always tried to learn from his failures. I mean, one thing he learned early on was that when you have a big disaster, something that doesn't work at all critically or commercially, something that leaves you with egg on your face, the next thing you should do is go towards something small for which you have no commercial expectations. Just do it because you love it. After Catch-22, the movie version of Catch-22, which was his first real flop, he did that with Carnal Knowledge, which was a movie that he did just because he really loved the script and knew exactly what he wanted to do with it. And of course, you know, the end of that story is that Carnal Knowledge becomes a very big success and puts him right back on a good career path. And he does that over and over and over again, even late in his life, when he was in his mid-70s, he had a revival of the play The Country Girl on Broadway, and it was not a success. It was not liked by critics, and it wasn't his best work. And soon after that, he took out a legal pad and started making a list of the things he felt he had done wrong on that. And it's always very moving to me that even in his mid-70s and later, he wanted to learn from his mistakes so that he wouldn't make them again.
The book is endlessly fascinating about such a unique and fascinating human being. The name of the book, Mike Nichols, A Life. It is published by Penguin Press. Mark Harris, I thank you so much for being with us and sharing with us this morning.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
A great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the name of the book is Mike Nichols, A Life. It is published by Penguin Press. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.